And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. And Kyle, I've been loving the screen time that the First Cut Podcast has been getting on the Golf Channel as you've been sitting in on Morning Drive with the crew and the Golf Channel. You are still there. We're recording here on Wednesday morning, National Signing Day. And how's it gone so far? 3 days down, two to go.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, it's been fun. They've actually shouted out the First Cut Podcast, not only in the intro, but throughout the show at times, which has been pretty cool. It's been great. I was telling somebody this the other day. It's crazy how fast, and Porath told me this would happen, but how fast TV goes. Mm-hmm. You look up and you're like an hour and a half in, and it's like, well, what just happened? You know, part of it is like you can't stop. It's not like you can go like take a break and eat or, you know, go to the bathroom. I mean, you can, but you got to do it quick. And that's been the thing. That and how many people work on the show have been the two most surprising things for me.
What about in terms of as you've gotten into the weeds, where do you think that you've landed some good haymakers, and where do you think maybe you realize you found yourself, your tongue got tied, or a topic you weren't ready for? Give me one here. We're more than past the midway point, so it's not quite your halftime evaluation. But what are you taking your notes in as we go into the final 2 days?
Yeah, I think that the thing that I am will go good at first is when people make kind of broad generalizations about players or themes, but they don't really have data to back it up. Like sometimes I can remember stuff off the cuff, not all the time, and sometimes I make those broad generalizations, you know. But shout out to Justin Ray. I'm a Justin Ray disciple, so I think that sometimes I bring a little bit of that to the show. But in terms of like being able to riff and just talk off the cuff, it's really hard. It's really hard to do it well and to make it sound natural. And so when everybody's just kind of riffing on a topic, I think that I struggle to formulate an opinion really quickly to kind of chime in. That part of it is, it's kind of an art. And, you know, I think that people who have been in TV for a lot longer than I have and are certainly more natural at it are just kind of better at the off the cuff stuff.
2 hours of television isn't very long. It can go by very, very quickly when you factor when you factor in the commercial breaks, the other segments, the other interviews and things that are going to be going on the set. It's like you're ramping yourself up, and you've got to make sure that your energy is at 105 for the entire 2 hours, but then they're just going to like spurt you out for 7 minutes at a time on like five different occasions.
Yeah, it's interesting because people think of like, oh, 2 hours, you got to talk for 2 hours. And really, I write down notes every day, and I've got like 10 notes, 10 points I want to make, and I don't even get to all of them.
Right. That's you over preparing for your time.
Yeah. And they're 10 points on a variety of topics. And then some stuff you're just going to naturally react to, like I said earlier. I go through 10 points in like two paragraphs when I'm writing. So it's different. It's certainly not easy. And I thought Shane Bacon said this really well. I had dinner with him a couple weeks ago, and obviously he used to be at CBS Sports and now is famous and is on the broadcast for Fox for the US Open. And he said, you know, I think that TV is easier than writing, but he said it's harder to be good at TV than it is to be good at writing. And I think that's really true. And I think the reason he said TV is easier is because you can't, like I said earlier, like you just, it's sink or swim. You just have to go do it.
And right.
You can't.
There's no time to beat yourself up over it. There's no time to like wring your hands about your sentences or your intro or your lead. There's no rewriting. Yeah. You just got to go.
Yeah. And that part's fun, right? Because the not fun part of writing is the stopping to, you know, go eat because you're, you know, like you're prolonging the inevitable. You know, you have to write this thing and you just either don't want to do it or are stuck or whatever. There's no getting stuck on TV. You just keep going, you know? And so I think that's the quote unquote easier part of it, but it's really hard to be good. And the people I've been with, you know, Damon Hack, Robert Dameron, Paige McKenzie, they're all awesome. And they've been so kind and inviting and just kind of welcomed me in. And I don't know. I can't say enough good things about those guys or about all the people that are working on the show. It's really impressive to kind of come in as an outsider and view everything.
All right. Well, you haven't won an award yet. You can go easy on your acceptance speech. I want to thank everybody for helping out with this. This is really a team award. All right. Let's take a look at the weekend coming up at Pebble Beach. Y'all have already done a little bit of this on the show as well, but the event itself, because it's a historic venue, because we are going to get the U.S. Open at Pebble, it comes with some charm, some excitement. We've got the stars of movie, television, music are all going to be around. So good energy all throughout. Like as we start to look for the golf takeaways, where in the tournament do you really start to see the competition at the top start to get a little bit more intense? Like when at this tournament does it turn from like charming high fives to a little bit more of the gritty competitiveness that we find often from the top golfers competing for wins?
I think it's not until Sunday. I think most tournaments you see it, even at majors, you don't really see it get intense until Saturday. And I think this is one of the few where it doesn't happen until Sunday because there's not that, because everybody plays all three courses and you don't really cut the field down and the amateurs don't really take a back seat until kind of the final round starts on Sunday. But I think this year is interesting because I think we're going to do this silly thing where we're like, oh, whoever wins is going to be the U.S. Open favorite. And it's like, well, U.S. Open's in 5 months. But I do think that it's going to be interesting to view the course through a U.S. Open lens. And so, even today on the show, Robert was talking about how, well, on hole number 9, this is where the U.S. Open tee is. It's a lot different than the regular tournament tee. And I think you're going to see a lot of that this week, which I think is exciting because you're already looking forward to the third major of the season.
Do you have a pick to win?
Yeah, I got Tommy Locks, Tommy Fleetwood. First PGA Tour win. He's never played this event before, so there's not a ton to go on, but it's kind of easy to see, isn't it? Him just by the Pacific Ocean, hair flowing, game flowing. I kind of want to wait to pick him for the U.S. Open, but I'm going to pick Spieth for the U.S. Open in June. So I'm going with Tommy Fleets for Pebble Beach Pro-Am this week.
I'm going to say that it is hard to see, but only because we've been really trapped in the week to week and in the moment to moment in golf. And that's probably something that is a little bit because of Tiger Woods, a little bit because of being not only Tiger brings us to the party and brings in all the extras to the party, but also we have had a lot with some of the top stars in golf all having a big splash. Ricky Fowler winning the Sergio DQ, Bryson absolutely lighting it up overseas, Dustin Johnson winning. Like the names have been popping here in the early part of 2019. Tommy Fleetwood has not been one of those names so far. So when I say that I can't see it, it has less to do with this game and more with me recognizing that as a prisoner of the moment in golf in 2019, one of the greatest talents in the world can somehow fly below the radar. I would bet that Tommy Fleetwood, while everyone recognizes what he can do, I would bet he's not on a lot of people's minds right now in terms of the general golf fan.
Yeah, but I think that's part of it for me is like we've seen I guess you've seen Xander a couple times and Kuchar a couple times, but really it's been different stars popping up every week. And so for me, it's like, oh, well, maybe, this could be Fleetwood's week. Mm. And so because of the variety, that almost leads me to, to want to pick Fleetwood maybe more than I normally. Like if he had won last week I don't even know if he played last week.
I don't think he did. Oh, so you mean overseas on the European Tour? He definitely did not play last week here.
No, he didn't play Phoenix. I couldn't remember if he played Saudi Arabia. I don't think he did because I think he played Abu Dhabi and Dubai. But if he had won one of those, I think I would actually be more hesitant to pick him just because it's like DJ this week he's never won 2 weeks in a row. It's just hard. It's just hard to do statistically. It's just difficult, especially when you're flying all the way over from Saudi Arabia and all that. So I think the fact that he hasn't won actually it makes it, I think, more enticing to maybe pick him for me.
They had me on the Sportsline show talking golf this week, and they were throwing the will they, won't they majors. You know, they, you set the price. Will this person win a major? Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And I picked DJ on a no. Number one, you've got value just because the, you know, so he is one of the leaders in the odds in to win a major in 2019. So if you pick no, you've got one of the best payouts. But the other thing that I said was that, man, I believe right now that Dustin Johnson is great, but I kind of am hesitant. Or not, I'm not hesitant. I'm wondering if I'm ready to shut the window on him being the alpha. Like, I wonder if that window is open and shut at this point. We've already seen it come and go.
I don't think it is. I mean, he's only 34, right?
Yep.
He wins last week. He won, what, three? I just feel like he's a three wins a year guy right now. I don't know. Who knows? I think only time can tell about a lot of that stuff.
Oh, and I was picking it for majors, and part of my explanation was, let's not forget that the only major that he does have is when he didn't even know what the score was.
Yeah, that part is – that's a great Sean Martin take. That's, like, one of my favorites. I'm making my Masters countdown list, so the 1 through 90 or 88 or whatever.
I would put DJ at 10.
No, I've got him at 5, I think.
Okay.
And the reason is because, like, this isn't true of all courses, but especially at Augusta, it's a par 68. I mean, he's not even playing a par 72. And you go back to 15, he made three eagles in the same round, which is basically like making three birdies for him on these par fives, which are DJ par fours. I don't know. This goes back to the Ricky discussion of, like, winning is so arbitrary. And I think we're going to look back on this era and think, wow, DJ is better than Brooks Koepka, who has three majors.
Right.
And so there's all these, like, kind of out of balance collection of major champion wins.
But I think that's DJ's role. Like, I think I'm firmly comfortable acknowledging that the statistics and the form and the quality of golf and the talent and the athletically arrogant swing and everything. Like, I think that is all going to be something that we are going to remember Dustin Johnson fondly for. And we are going to remember his era as the alpha. But I wonder if when it comes to the judgment of wins, especially at the major championship level, I think you know, we'll see. If DJ releases a new record, I might be able to get into it. But yeah, I think I'm off buying every one of them blindly.
I think it'd be pretty great if he won, like, if his only majors ended up being just these unreal courses. Like, what if he won Oakmont, Pebble, and Augusta? That'd be insane, right?
Well, then he would be one of the, what, only 40-some players with more than two majors?
I think it's around 40, I think.
It's 82, but only 82 players have won multiple in over 150 years of major championship golf.
That's pretty wild. Speaking of multiple major winners, did you see what Koepka said about Sergio?
Was it when he was out there with Giannis? I guess he did some media?
Yeah, he's doing a PGA Championship media tour, and he went on a podcast, the Playing Through podcast, which is Brian Wacker and somebody I don't remember. I'm sorry. But he said, you know, let me pull up the quote because it was so good. He was talking about how Sergio just is acting like a child. And I said this on Morning Drive. When did Koepka become the, like, ombudsman for professional golf? Okay, he said that's just Sergio acting like a child. It's unfortunate that he's got to do that and complain. Everybody's got to play the same golf course. I didn't play very good, but you didn't really see anybody else doing that. You're 40 years old, so you've got to grow up eventually.
That's a double slam, because number one, it's in a patronizing tone like your father, but it's also pointing out the fact that he's 40 years old and so much older in a game that is getting younger. Like, that's an evisceration from Brooks Koepka. In terms of the lifeless quotes that we've gotten from him for most of his career, that's a decapitation.
he's got takes. He had Bryson takes last week. He had those tour championship takes where he was like, you know, I'm not going to just say I'm not. I forgot what he said. But when he was mad about not getting asked to go to press conferences and stuff, do you remember that?
No.
And it sounded like he was calling out like some of the more popular guys. I don't know who. I don't know who he had in mind when he was saying this. But yeah, he's turned into a pretty fun quote all of a sudden.
Mike Gundy, by the way, right now is on the 24/7 Sports Signing Day show just in front of a wall of NFL jerseys trying to stunt as hard as he can.
Maybe Sergio needs to go back and watch the Gundy rant about being 40.
That's true. He could learn a lot of lessons from Mike Gundy. Sergio might also like capturing snakes. Who knows? We've got Jordan Spieth coming up here in a little bit. Jordan Spieth, I feel like they ripped... Were you the first person to come out the gate and talk about him having the best scoring average over the last 10 years? Because you mentioned it in the A block, and then all of a sudden they had it as a stat at the bottom. I was like, ooh, they like Kyle's stats.
Yeah, well, it was Justin Ray. Justin Ray he's unbelievable. He's got these stat sheets every day. It's really remarkable. Like, the stuff on Twitter is only like 10% of it, of what he actually does. He just kind of just some nuggets for everybody of what his actual work is. But
does he work in Orlando?
Yes. Yeah, he's here.
So have you been like with Justin Ray, you know, watching his feet and doing the other discipleship duties?
I actually had to, I have to carry his golf bag around. That's my indoctrination. No, yeah. I think we're supposed to get a beer later this week. Cool. But Spieth at Pebble, scoring average of 68.96 over the best scoring average over the last 10 years. He's never finished outside the top 22. Obviously a former champ here. Him and DJ have just owned this place. I mean, they've been so good. DJ's finished in the top 5 7 times out of 11 appearances, which is a joke.
Right.
And I think this week will be interesting for Spieth, because I think when people say, are you worried about Jordan Spieth? Are you worried about Jordan Spieth? I think when I get worried about him is when he starts to play bad at courses where he usually plays well. So Pebble last year, he's not playing well last year, right? He still finishes T20. Augusta last year, he's playing a little bit better and he finishes, but he still has kind of a down year for him. He still finishes third there. So what are you doing at Pebble? What are you doing at Augusta? What are you doing at these different places where you've had a ton of success? And so I think that's why I don't, like, bigger picture, if he misses a cut this week, no big deal. But it is sort of interesting because he's always played well at Pebble Beach.
Anything else you want to set up here before we take a break and then roll the interview? Were in Dallas, right?
Yeah, we were at Dallas National. He's got his Spieth 3 Under Armour shoe coming out. You know, he was, as people are about to hear, he's great to talk to. Like, he's just very thoughtful. I asked him why he's so honest in press conferences, and he basically said, like, I can't help myself.
Well, he said he forgets that there's cameras.
Yeah.
He thinks like, he's just having a conversation with the writers that are just always hanging around.
Exactly, which I think is great and hilarious. He is he's one of my favorite people in the game in terms of just being thoughtful and thinking about why he does what he does. Now, I think that gets him into trouble sometimes when he starts getting a little too deep on his swing. Like, I think sometimes he just should hang out with DJ and play golf. But in terms of talking to him, he's very, I had not been around him much, but he's very electrifying. I don't know if that's the right word. He's very engaging, and maybe much more so than it comes across when he's just talking into a microphone at the podium. He kind of draws you in a way that I didn't expect, which is pretty cool, and hopefully it comes across in the interview.
All right, Kyle and Jordan coming up right after this.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, Jordan Spieth, when you think about designing a shoe, you know, I've heard you talk about the day. What do you envision? Are you thinking about yourself walking at Augusta? Are you thinking about yourself playing a casual round? What do you envision when you talk about designing a shoe?
I'm kind of more thinking about the kind of most difficult elements, like your Open Championship, your Pebble Beach, kind of what's going to perform the best, be the most consistent, be as stable as can be on the ground, but is also going to be able to kind of weed through the weather. Just your extreme environment is kind of what I think about with the shoe first. And then second, it goes to what can I make most comfortable on my foot. So first, they have to be able to weather. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to, you know, stay locked in the ground. You don't want it slipping on an important tee shot on Sunday just because it's, you know, it was, the grass was wet and now it's like dry out and it's just slippery. But second of all, it's kind of your comfort level and the consistency of the shoe. So I don't have to really worry with Under Armour about the weather stuff. That's kind of what they specialize in.
Yeah.
So most of what went into this shoe was, hey, I train in these trainers. How can we make this shoe essentially my trainers with spikes on them and just even better for golf?
One of the things I noticed about the first two and putting them on, wearing them, they're heavy. They were heavier. I know this one's lighter. Is that the biggest difference from the first two, or what would you say is the biggest difference?
I think actually more, certainly being lighter will be the most noticeable difference when you first put them on. But the biggest difference is there was a lot more thought and technology that went into this. So where the technology is used, there's research done at the shoe facility in France where you're looking on your power plates and you're looking at the transfer of weight through the golf swing, and everything that we do comes through the ground. So the fact that we wore dress shoes with spikes in them for a number of years is kind of funny given the advances in technology elsewhere, yet nobody really wanted an athletic shoe in golf. And so now taking that the next step, okay, where exactly is all of that force used and how can it be utilized? And I think that's the biggest change here is we went from like a really kind of good solid golf shoe, good solid athletic golf shoe to, hey, this one's actually working with your foot to where you're closer to the ground, it's lighter, but it has that stability and that advantage as you move your foot. It's just moving with it. There's no resistance.
Under Armour has become, I mean, obviously working with Under Armour has become a big part of your professional life, designing shoes, clothes, all these different things. What's the most fun part of that for you? Is there an entrepreneurial side, or what do you enjoy about that?
Yeah, I think for me, it's like, it's from kind of my first couple trips in there when they're like, hey man, put this base layer on. We've got this chamber that goes to negative 15 degrees. And you're just gonna wear one layer of clothing, go in there and tell me if you're cold. And I go in there and I'm like, well, yeah, my hands and my face are freezing, but I'm not cold wherever this, how is this? Yeah. They're like, yeah, we're putting that technology in a light jacket that you're gonna be able to wear at the British Open where you just have one jacket layer. I'm like, wow, You know, like just being introduced to that kind of technology and recognizing like this actually can help. Like the clothes that you wear, yeah. what you put on your feet, what you, your pants, like just like, wow, this is actually above and beyond. Like they're actually thinking about performance apparel, yeah. which is just unusual in the sport of golf.
Yeah. I want to talk a little golf in terms of, you have a press conference at every event. It's Jordan Spieth's here. You're talking. How have you? Do you feel like you've found the middle ground of wanting to let people in versus wanting to keep stuff to yourself? I know you kind of have tried to figure that out over the last few yeah. years. Have you arrived at that place?
Kind of. I think every press conference I go in, I got Jay saying less is more. You know. Because, but at the same time, it's like, you know, people. I think it's cool. Like if I were a kid and I was watching a press conference of a player that I liked, I'd want to hear like a way that I could practice or get better or an insight or something that could help me. And so I try and take that into consideration with the, you know, hey, maybe I found some competitive advantages and I want to, mm-hmm. you know, obviously keep them to myself.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a struggle. I think I've done a little bit. Yeah, I think I get better each time, but
is that why you let people in? Because I watch you, I watch Rory, we ask questions, and some, like going back to Rory's deal with the Olympics, you're watching it and you're like, and you can like see it coming that he's going to say something. But is that why you let people in? Is because you want kids to look up to it? Why is it that you're so honest with people? Because I don't think it's something that
maybe. I think I just get like super excited. Like, I get so excited about golf and stuff that we're working on and stuff like that. And I'm like, and it's just like, I forget that I'm telling that to everyone that they're writing and to. And I just think of it as like, these are people that I see all the time that I'm walking and talking with. And I'm like, hey, I get so excited about it. I think it's kind of the main thing. But, you know, I mean, I try and do a little bit less because the more there is and the more optimistic you are, that then if it doesn't necessarily go the way you see it going, then all of a sudden that's a failure versus in the eyes of the questions that are coming.
And yeah,
it's
totally.
Like, it's like, yeah, okay, maybe I didn't need to. I'm optimistic, but I'm saying things need time. And yet, you know, it's in the sports world, it's, you know, what has happened lately. It's results based of what that would, which I'm the same way as a sports fan.
Yeah.
So like you can't hate. It's just like the job that's done and you just gotta figure out how you want to go about it as an athlete, I guess.
Does it, as you get more successful, more time is dedicated to stuff like Under Armour and everything else you have going on, does focusing on actual golf get harder or is it easier because it's kind of a respite from everything else?
I think it's about the same. You know, at times it becomes easier. It's a good getaway. It's fun. It's, I enjoy that part of the job too, of what I do. But certainly, you know, way back when I was in junior college golf, it was, hey, I'm going to golf and then I'm going to eat and go to sleep. And I'm going to golf and then eat and go to sleep. And that's what I love to do too. So, it's got kind of both sides to it, I guess.
When I mention the final round of the 18 Masters, what's the first thing you think of?
I think of what I found on the range right before I started. I'm like, huh, that feeling right there gets me whatever ball flight I want. And I have like this freedom. I'm 9 shots back. There's nothing to lose to go play Sunday at Augusta with the Sunday pins, being able to just attack. And wow, I just got this feeling that I kind of lost the last couple days. I got it back and it feels great. I'm like, man, this is exciting. And I remember the first 2 shots I hit on number 1 were kind of the trial run with that swing feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit, you know, a shot down the middle of the fairway and then I hit a cut 8-iron right over the flag stick to about 8 feet. And I'm like, this could be a fun round today. You know, when you find something and it's clicking, you're like, that's repeatable.
Yeah.
So I think of a couple of these iron shots I hit. There and to one, I remember the one I hit into 5 with a 5-iron to the back pin to a few feet, and I just remember just getting off and running, just feeling that groundswell at Augusta, the roars just start to echo, and like, man, you never know. I mean, I'm one to say that you never know what can happen in Augusta. So good, bad, and everything in between. I mean, I just keep on putting pressure on. I could find myself in the lead here at some point. So it was that's what I think about that swing feel and the confidence it bred.
I remember being on four with Rory and Reed, and you birdied nine. And I'm like, I got to figure out how to get to like 10 and 11 yeah. before something happens over there. Charles Howell III told me one time that he doesn't think that tournament golf is necessarily a lot of fun. Do you agree or disagree with that sentiment?
I disagree. I mean, it just depends. You know, I think he's probably talking from a golf purity mm-hmm. standpoint, which I can certainly relate to. Like, if I'm out here just playing by myself, I can certainly enjoy things about that round more than I can tournament play. But I just grew up like ultra competitive. And so
yeah.
it's the tournament is where it's about. Like, you can compete. You can be off, you can be on. It doesn't matter if you compete and you find a way to get the ball in the hole. Like, that's cooler for me to be able to try and win golf tournaments. But it's also nice to step back and have that kind of purity and artistry of just regular golf too.
What's the most important shot you've ever hit?
Most important shot I've ever hit. I think the shot that I hit into 13, the year I won the Masters on Sunday, I hit a 5-iron off the ball above my feet, and I didn't have to go for it, but it would keep the pedal down, and it was just my DNA. It was my DNA to always go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I stuck with that DNA and pulled off the shot. It led to birdie. The way I was putting, I could have just laid up and made birdie as well, but it made it a lot easier. And it kept that pressure on Justin Rose to have to try and catch me. And as far as a shot goes, that was probably number one.
Who's the person over the last few years that you've been playing with him? And you kind of look around and you're like, I live a crazy life. This is pretty wild. Just off not competitive round, but just playing with whoever.
And I think to myself, I live a crazy
life?
Yeah,
you're like, well, I can't believe I'm playing golf with this person.
Oh, yeah, okay. So I think I've been able to play golf with Bush and Obama within the last year and a half. I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think about past presidents, and you're like, and they're like asking you questions about golf, and it's like, this is a bit bizarre. And then I'm a massive sports fan, so you know, number of sports figures to play with, and then think like what you do is cool, or they, you know, there's like, man, I like watching what you do. It's like, you have no idea. Like, I literally turn on the TV and watch you. You know, it's. That's where you kind of pinch yourself. I think ex-presidents, it's like, man, that's pretty amazing.
Who's the older non-Tiger player that you've learned the most from, and what have you learned from him?
It's hard to single it out because you could name a player and I could be like, man, he's been so helpful in this regard. Sneds, Zach Johnson, Phil. There's a number of guys that have offered advice through different points of my career on different on or off course. Mm-hmm. That's what's so cool about the tour is, like, you know, as long as you're just, you know, you want to befriend people or you ask questions, like, the guys want to help. Like, it's just golf's such a unique sport in that everybody kind of goes through the same ups and downs, and how you climb out of it differs from person to person, and sometimes the way they do it may actually help you and you hadn't even thought about it or something like that, or they give you advice that makes it a little bit easier off the course to just kind of settle into tournament weeks or be able to get through a 3-week stretch, recover better, whatever it may be. So I wish I had a better answer for you there, but it's kind of a number of guys with different advice.
One more, when did you decide to hug Patrick Reed at Torrey? was that spur of the moment? Was that planned? When was that decision?
I was talking with Michael about it. We were like, because everything kind of got blown up.
Yeah.
And I had already seen Patrick at Sony and there, and nothing had been different. Like, and so it wasn't like the first time we saw each other since the Ryder Cup. And I was like, but this is the first time, because you could already see it brewing. Like, you're on Instagram, you see like the look, Spieth and Reed are paired. And it's like, oh, geez, this, there's going to be like four cameras right in our face. And it's like, you could either just shake hands and this lives on, or you could just do something and just hopefully end it.
Yeah.
And I figured we'd both laugh no matter what I did. And so we were both like, we had a few ideas. It was the, me and Michael, that is. Yeah. Patrick had no idea that I would do anything. And he was just, I think, trying to fist bump. And it was the, you know, the potential handshake pullback, you know, cram it up a cram hole LaFleur, or the, I was going to do his, you know, move or whatever. And we both just kind of settled on the hug is like,
it's a good, it's a good ending.
Just be like, it's all okay, guys. Yeah. It's all, and so it was, everybody's laughing there. He laughed. I, you know, so hopefully that just killed it all.
That's great. Jordan, thanks for the time.
Yeah, appreciate no worries, man. Absolutely. Nicely.
Our thanks to Jordan Spieth. You can watch Spieth this weekend at the AT&T at Pebble Beach. Make sure that you follow Kyle on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Subscribe to the First Cut Podcast. Please leave us a rating, a nice review. We love reading your comments. And make sure you tune back with us on Sunday. We'll be back at you with the Pebble Beach Recap.